Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Time to get you dialed into the biggest stories of the day. This is the Daily 10 with Matt Chernoff.
All right, folks, here we go. It's time for the Friday edition of the Daily 10, and this is a big Friday. We have playoff baseball to look forward to, a big college football weekend, NFL Sunday. It's a good one. Thanks for joining us, by the way. I hope you guys subscribe to this podcast. If you don't, hit the subscribe button now or follow it wherever it is you get your favorite podcasts, and it'll be waiting for you each and every day. It's Atlanta's only daily podcast covering the stuff that you guys care about the most. All right, so let's start with the playoff baseball. As the Braves begin their fourth straight postseason run today in Milwaukee against the Brewers with a 4:37 first pitch. Charlie Morton gets the ball for the Braves against Corbin Burnes in game one. We do have the rest of the schedule now for the division series. You already knew game two tomorrow at 5:07 in Milwaukee. But we have game three now in Atlanta at 1:07 on Monday afternoon. Not exactly the most wanted time if you want, you know, a jazzed up crowd and, you know, you'd love to play a night game or at least the late afternoon. But as of now, that's 1:07. It could change to later in the afternoon at 4:07 if the White Sox-Astros series was to be a three-game sweep for the Astros, who won Game 1 yesterday, so keep that in mind. Game 4 in Atlanta, if necessary, on Tuesday is a 5:07 first pitch. Again, that could move to a little bit later if one of the other series is over early. And Game 5, if necessary, in Milwaukee would be a 5:07 start on Thursday. So as I mentioned, this is the fourth straight postseason for a lot of guys in that Braves clubhouse. So they've seen just about everything now in October, from 2018 when they were the upstart surprise, who was happy to be there and got run out in four games against the Dodgers. 2019, where they thought they had a real chance to make a deep run, only to have it end in the fifth game against the Cardinals with that awful first inning where they gave up 10 runs. 2020, the weirdness of the short season, a wild card series that they would win in two games against the Reds, followed up with a division series sweep against the Marlins, and then the seven-game series against the Dodgers. So, again, a lot of experience in that clubhouse, which gives Freddie Freeman a lot of confidence.
We have the expectation to win now. 2018, I think we just surprised everyone. You know, we were just happy to be there again after going through a rebuild. 19, you know, just didn't work out for us. 20, we had Ronald was a little banged up. Ozzy was a little banged up, but we still got one game from the World Series. And this year, even though we lost Ronald in July, we played with this group that we have right now for the last 2 months, and it's been a whole different team. We got a good feeling when you throw Charlie Morton, who's just there, Max Fried, Ian Anderson. We just got to feel like we're just set up very nicely to go into this, and we expect to win.
Now, Freddie, you heard in his voice how he feels about this team. Maybe in July he wouldn't have felt the same with all the injuries, the loss of Acuna late in that month. To add to the loss of Ozuna, there was no Travis d'Arnaud. The Braves had to rebuild their entire outfield, and they did that. Their current 26-man roster, it's not the best in this field. Frankly, if you were to rank all the teams, it might be near the bottom. But the Braves are playing really good baseball. They've won 8 of 9 to close out the regular season, 12 of 14 dating back to that road trip on the West Coast. If you like the theory about the hot team, well, the Braves kind of fit that bill against a Brewers team that took their foot off the gas about midway through September because they had such a big lead in the NL Central. They only went 4-10 down the stretch, so we'll see if that factor carries over into this series. Now, the other thing is the Braves have dealt with some injury stuff. It seems like each year of this playoff run. Think back to 2018, heading into the playoffs, when the Braves lost Dansby Swanson right before the postseason was set to begin. 2019, Freddie Freeman had the elbow injury that he really didn't want to acknowledge, but you know he couldn't drive the ball and really struggled in his series against the Cardinals. Even a year ago, Ronald Acuna wasn't close to healthy. As much as, you know, the Braves wouldn't tip their hand on that, you saw Ronald really struggle in most of the postseason. I don't think Ozzie Albies, who dealt with injuries throughout 2020, was right throughout the postseason either. Now, while they dealt with injuries this year, those are, again, throughout the regular season. This is as healthy as this new version of the Braves has been this whole season. Travis d'Arnaud's back and healthy. Ian Anderson's worked himself back into form. He's going to be your Game 3 starter. That rebuild outfield with Jorge Soler and Eddie Rosario and Adam Duvall with added to that Jock Peterson, the Braves have a full complement of what they like going into the series. But the biggest difference in this team, if they're going to make a postseason run, is the rotation. 2020, the Braves got lucky that it was a 60-game season because they would have never survived a full 162 with all the pitching injuries and underperformance that they had. In the postseason a year ago, it was Max and Ian and just a lot of prayer after that. Do you all remember that Kyle Wright got starts in the postseason? Bryce Wilson got starts, including that now memorable Game 4 against the Dodgers where he outdueled Clayton Kershaw. And yes, A.J. Minter acted as an opener for the Braves in Game 5 of the NLCS, pitched his tail off in three innings with seven Ks, but that's not the formula for making a deep postseason run routinely. This year, it's very different. Red-hot Max Fried, red-hot Charlie Morton, hopefully a guy in Ian who has pitched well down the stretch that you can count on in Game 3. And I don't know what Waskari Noah's role is going to be. There's a chance they start him in Game 4 of this series, but it's more likely that he's used as a piece in the bullpen to bridge the gap at times if needed between the starter and the high-leverage relievers. But again, they can go both ways with him. That starting pitching depth and the way that Morton and Max Fried are pitching, it gives the Braves a puncher's chance. Here's Freddie Freeman, who says he feels really good about where their pitching is right now.
You know, when you put Charlie Morton as your Game 1 and you have Game 2 and Max Fried, you feel real comfortable and confident going into that series. And, you know, you have Ian, who went out there and did it against the Dodgers too. And we started A.J. Minter in the playoffs last year. You know, we were just mixing and matching. And now you got all these guys with experience and adding Charlie Morton to that mix. We feel real good. You know, we have the right guys to match up against their guys because we're going against Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff and Freddie. And I think the pitching staff, the starters, it's going to be a good match. But we feel pretty good about ourselves.
So we'll see what Charlie Morton can do. The veteran who doesn't seem to get rattled by much goes in Game 1 today against the Brewers with a chance to give the Braves an early opportunity, right? You win Game 1 with Max Fried and the Brewers staring down the battle at the barrel at Max, and all of a sudden you kind of go, okay, this thing could be, you know, what the Braves are looking for with that 1-2 punch. We'll see how it goes. We are brought to you by the Daily Draft in downtown Woodstock. If you're looking for a place to watch your playoff baseball, check out my friend Sean Daly and the great folks at the Daily Draft. They're on Main Street, downtown Woodstock. You'll love it from the moment you walk through the door, and frankly, before you walk through the door, because you'll see a walk-up window where you can order your drinks. When you walk through the doors, you'll see one of the biggest screens in Atlanta, surrounded with all the flat screens for your enjoyment, so you always have a great view of the game. A chef-inspired menu with so many great options. The flatbreads, the burgers, the wings, the salads, you name it, they have it all. And they also have self-serve taps, which is uber convenient. You'll love it. A craft beer bar and more. Find out all the info online at thedailydraft.net or see them in downtown Woodstock on Main Street. And when you mention my podcast, The Daily 10, they will take 10% off your lunch order when you pop in Monday through Friday between 11:30 and 3. All right, let's move on to the football now. Georgia gets ready to see Auburn. The Dogs remain a 15.5-point favorite in the game, according to the Caesars Sportsbook. Kickoff 3:30 tomorrow in Auburn. Now, we all know how dominant Georgia's defense has been, but when you take a deeper dive into the numbers, it's even more impressive. Seth Emerson, who covers Georgia for The Athletic, did a piece that was titled 23 Notes, Nuggets, and Numbers You May Not Know About Georgia's Dominant Defense. It's really interesting. So I kind of cherry-picked four or five of my favorites from this. Again, this is all Seth's work, and he did a good job. He mentions nose tackles Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter have been on the field when Georgia scored an offensive touchdown. Remember, they lined up in a big jumbo set to help the running game score. They have not been on the field when the other team scored a touchdown, and they play a lot. It tells you how good they've been. Here's another one. We know how tough it is to run on Georgia's defense. Well, Georgia opponents have been more likely to be stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage, which has happened 49 times, rather than gain 5 or more yards on a running play, which has only happened 38 times. Here's another one. Opponents have gone 3 and out more than half of the time against Georgia's defense, 57.4% of the time. The only FBS team with a better rate is Wisconsin at 58.5%. Kind of crazy, right? Here's one more. Thanks to 2 pick sixes and a safety, Georgia's defense is directly responsible for as many points, which is 16, as it's allowed. They've scored 16. They've only given up 16. I mean, this stuff is, I don't care who your opponents are, this stuff is crazy. And one final one. The 23 points that Georgia has allowed, the program's fewest at this point in the season since 1937, when the Dogs just allowed 14 points in 5 games. The forward pass wasn't really an element in the game back then, so think about what Georgia's doing now. So again, good work by Seth right there. You can see the rest of those numbers at The Athletic. And one final note is the Falcons are now in London preparing for their matchup with the Jets on Sunday morning. Falcons are still a 3-point pick in the game, according to the Caesars Sportsbook. I told you yesterday during the podcast and on the radio, prepare for weirdness. When the Falcons are involved in one of these type of games, Sunday could bring that weirdness. Well, it happened to come Thursday, well before the kickoff Sunday, when we learned Calvin Ridley didn't make the trip to London because he's dealing with a personal matter. We wish Calvin nothing but the best. I hope it's nothing serious. But to the football part of this, now the Falcons have to be extra creative with how they spread the football around. There's no reason that Kyle Pitts and Hayden Hurst shouldn't have more than 20 combined targets. You need that in this game. Like, those two guys can serve as, quote, receivers. Remember when the Patriots were kind of at their best when they had that double tight end set where you would see Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski, again, two big behemoth wide receivers in a tight end role. That's got to be a part of the game plan Sunday. I'll add to it Cordarrelle Patterson, who's been really good. He needs 7 or 8 targets. We'll find out what Olamide Zaccheaus can do. And then the backs, being Mike Davis and more traditional Wayne Gallman, they can get some targets as well. But back to Pitts and Hurst, who have not had enough targets through 4 weeks, in my opinion. I've been very clear with my expectation of Kyle Pitts that I don't think you're going to get the massive superstar numbers in year one out of Kyle, just because that's not how the NFL has worked with star young receivers and tight ends. Usually there's a kind of getting used to an acclimation process. But in a game like this, he's got to up the targets. Kyle's only got 26 targets in 4 games. He has 15 catches, 189 yards, and no touchdowns, which that's a problem. But Hayden Hurst only has 10 targets in 4 games. He's caught 9 passes for 63 yards, but also no touchdowns. Those two have to be featured in a game like this, without Calvin Ridley, with no Russell Gage, and a bunch of unknowns after that in the traditional wide receiver role. I will end today by giving you guys a couple of picks. I gave these on the radio yesterday. I'm not usually one to give picks, but I'm off to a really fun start, 9-3 on the year with my picks. So I figure while I'm feeling good, maybe take advantage of a couple of these. I like Vegas laying 5.5 against the Bears. If you've listened to the podcast or me on the radio, you know I love Justin Fields. But going on the road now for Justin, now that he's the full-time starting quarterback, there are growing pains. I think Vegas is pretty good. They're coming off a stinker performance a week ago. Lay the 5.5 with Vegas against Justin Fields and the Bears. And the last one is Tennessee, who also lost an ugly game to the Jets last week when they missed a kick, lost in overtime. They will travel to Jacksonville, where the Jags have been wrapped up in the Urban Meyer nonsense all this week. Tennessee's a much better team. Derrick Henry will run the heck out of the ball. Lay the 4, even though it's on the road. There's no home field for Jacksonville with noise. -4 for Tennessee against Jacksonville. We'll see how those two picks land coming up this week. If you guys would, hit the subscribe button right now or follow the podcast so you can have it waiting for you each and every day. Wherever it is you get your favorite pods, we're on all the platforms from Apple to Spotify, Google, Stitcher, you name it. Tune in. You can get them every which way you look. I will not be on the radio today. You've got Braves Playoff Baseball on 680 The Fan. Enjoy the baseball. We're back Monday for the next edition of The Daily 10.
Subscribe to The Daily 10 now and get the latest breaking news and biggest stories of the day every morning. Get more at 680thefan.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.